It's good to be here with y'all. You know, it's fun to watch that video. It's interesting, though, it was made 3 years ago. On that map, there's more churches. And the exciting part about that Christian school, I just got reports from them yesterday. As a matter of fact, I was talking to them. It said that we had a Christian school coming soon. They just built another building. We started the Christian school with 12. That same year, it went to 20. The next year, it went to 66. This year, we just started our third year. We're at 130 students in our Christian school. We're considered the premier private school in that community. And we do it as an outreach to reach the young people and their parents. And it is working. Also had contact with many of our youth pastors yesterday. You know, people say, well, you know, I'm a pastor with a heart for missions, et cetera, et cetera. I'm just a youth pastor that became a missionary. I still go to youth camp. I still go to the youth events. I still hang out with the youth. I still hang out with the youth pastors. I still train the youth pastors. It's just really what I enjoy to do. I'm going to be like that 80-year-old guy still going to youth rallies. Just what I enjoy, what I've always enjoyed. And yesterday I got a report from our Avance Sport leadership, from our youth ministry. They had soccer tournaments going in the northern region so that all of our churches in the northern region were together. Our churches in the southern region were together. And then in June we'll be doing another youth rally where all of our soccer players come in throughout the week and do that. So we have youth ministries, we have youth outreach, we have Avance Sport. Whatever it takes to reach the people, when you're in a country where half of the population's under 29, it kind of helps to have a youth pastor mindset. And so I really urge a lot of young people to consider going to the mission field. Somebody's got to be my replacement, you know. I'm already not connecting with all the youth stuff, right? But somebody's got to be our replacement one day. It's happening. Avance Sport, when we made this video, was in Nicaragua. Something happened immediately after. We're now in Panama, Costa Rica, and Cuba, and soon to be launching in Guatemala. And just received some message and spoke to a missionary heading to Honduras. His desire is to launch Avance Sport in Honduras. Missionaries throughout Africa are doing their own version of Avance Sport. Why? Because it's an interesting story. I was at lunch with a former professional boxer by the name of Alexis Arguello. He was a good friend of mine. This was in the early years. And Alexis said to me, he said, you know, don't expect any youth to come knocking at your doors asking you about Jesus. That's what Alexis told me at lunch. And he said, you're going to have to reach the youth where they're at, and the way to do that is through sports. And so really the birth of Avance Sport was not some brainchild of mine. It was actually just a former fighter that I did lunch with. And that was the cause of launching sports ministry in Nicaragua. So God can use anybody to get his work done. Now today we're going to be talking about missions, but we're going to be talking a lot about the church because I can't do missions without the church. And there's something interesting happening. I'm doing everything I can to try to get churches that support us to keep up with the efforts. But when you have success on the mission field in a third world country, it's different than success with a business. And I explain this over and over and time again. When you have success in business, you have more resources. When you have success on a third world mission field, you need more resources. That's the reality of it. That's the reality. And the simple truth is our supporting churches and the Baptist Bible Fellowship International churches that do give to our projects are not able to keep up with what is happening in Nicaragua. So what we've done is look in other areas. In 2017, I took a group of men. They were businessmen. We rode motorcycles from Texas through Mexico, Guatemala, El Salvador, Honduras, into Nicaragua. As a fundraiser, we raised $300,000. In 2020, I'll be doing 1,000 miles of the Baja Desert in Mexico as a fundraiser from Cabo San Lucas to Ensenada. And a race company is actually my sponsor, so it doesn't cost me a dime. But we're actually setting a goal on that for $1 million. We don't know if that's even possible, but we're going to do it. The interesting part is most of that money comes from businessmen or businessmen that get behind it and give through their local church. One problem. Why do we have to be out there doing fundraisers, trying to get the attention for the mission field when this was originally planned for the local church. I'm doing whatever I have to do, but I shouldn't have to. The local church should be seeing and begging to find missionaries on where they can give all their missions money to buy more land, to build more buildings, to plant more churches. And the missionaries on the mission field around the world are out there suffering, trying to get the job done because the local church is not giving like they used to. And I'll tell you, that's partially because there was a great generation called the baby boomers, and they gave because it was the right thing to do, but the baby boomers are dying. Your parents were in World War II. Your parents were in the Korean War. You're retiring. Some of you are dying. And the next generation is not picking up where you left off because you just did it because it was the right thing to do. You gave because it was the right thing to do. You gave to missions because the pastor said, here's what the Bible said, and you did it. So I'm challenging the young people that are here, my generation, Gen X, then Gen Y, the millennials, and then those that are in high school and going off to college now, the iGen, these new generations have got to get saved, baptized, become members of local churches, hear that missions was Jesus' plan to reach the world, and to get involved, to get in the game, to answer the call to missions, or to stay back on the lines supporting those who are on the front lines to get the job done. The church. It all depends on the church, the local church. You see, it goes from the neighborhoods to the nations, but we've got to stay in the boat. We've got to stay in that boat. What is the boat? It's the local church. Now in Acts chapter 27, you have Julius, who's a Roman centurion, bad mama jamma. You don't want to mess with these guys. He had to remain close to Paul at all times. He was to guard him. Through this contact, he actually developed respect for Paul, giving Paul liberties and later even saving his life and those that were on the ship because of the respect that that guard had for Paul. And I look at these stories in the Bible and I think, how would my integrity look to others? Would my integrity, my stand, gain the respect of those that don't even know Jesus? See, overcast weather made sailing dangerous in this time, and Paul's telling them, don't go. I feel that God's saying, don't go. You know, they're not going to listen to that. The sailing was sketchy in those waters from September to November. The events of Acts chapter 27 were in October. So it was a sketchy time to be sailing anyway. So it could have even been a lucky guess, really, is why what they're thinking. Well, that's just a lucky guess. You know, you're not supposed to sail between September and November. Whatever, let's just go. The master of the ship, he took a chance. They sailed at first winds and fair weather. But the deadly storm that Paul said was coming came. They finally listened to Paul about three-fourths of the way through the story when they thought that all hope was gone and they were going to lose anyway. The soldiers in the ship, by nature, by culture, and by the time, would have paid with their own lives if prisoners escaped. So the instinctive reaction of every soldier on that ship should have been to kill all the prisoners so they wouldn't get away. That would have been even considered acceptable. Julius, the centurion, was so impressed with Paul's integrity and character that he wanted to save his life. Julius was the highest ranking officer, and therefore he could make the decision to save Paul and, of course, the others that were there with him. Amazing what our integrity can do and what our character can communicate. See, you see, Paul gave the warning and they didn't listen, but then all of a sudden they realized, hey, this guy may be right. I have another warning. Missions as we know it is in danger of extinction. Now we can ignore the warning like the ship captain and soldiers, or we can heed the warning and be the change. Understand, there's some organizations out there that are trying to tap into businesses, foundations talking to businessmen, 501c3s talking to businessmen. And in fact, and sadly, I would even say, I've been offered a job to headquarter in a major city in America to just spearhead negotiations and meetings with businessmen to be able to give funds from businesses to missions. I'm still on the mission field. I didn't say I accepted the job. But it's great that people are out there doing it, yet sad that we have to. Why are we having to go out and try to do all these things when the initial original plan of God was that the local church fund this endeavor? The church should desire to invest in the missionary endeavor of Jesus. It is God-given marching orders. We are to go into all the world and reach the lost with the gospel. That is the mission. That seems like an impossible task, but God is the one that gives the marching orders, and He knows what He'll accomplish through the faithful ones. So you, the church, can be a part of the missionary endeavor and do it successfully. But how? How can we successfully complete the mission that Jesus left with His leadership team when He took off a couple thousand years ago? Well, in verse 3 of Acts chapter 27, it says, "And the next day we touched at Sidon, and Julius courteously entreated Paul to give him liberty to go unto his friends and refresh himself." Paul, go have a blast. Go see your buddies. No big deal. I know you're a prisoner, and I'm a guard. But just go do whatever you want. Have a party. That didn't happen. That was completely abnormal. But what had happened, like I said, was in the time that he had spent in that ship with the centurion guard, in those short moments that he had with that man, he gained his respect. Paul was getting special treatment from Julius the centurion simply by living a life of integrity and character. You see, if you want to help missions, you have to grow the local church. If you want to grow the local church, you got to be men and women of character and integrity. And people will tend to want what you have because it's different than what they have, which is typically an absolute disaster outside of Christ. But see, missions is a team event. Our character will repel others or draw them to the cause, and our cause is Jesus. If we're Christ-like, then we can open our mouths and with no embarrassment whatsoever, invite people to church or talk about the gospel. I never understand why somebody says, "Well, I'm just so embarrassed to talk about, you know, to witness. I don't have the gift of evangelism." That's not a gift. You have a tongue. That's gift enough. What are you embarrassed about? Paul wasn't embarrassed. You know, I like when you have an invitation and some guy is like, "Boom, I need to get saved. We're having civil unrest in Nicaragua. There's people dying in the streets. And I get a visitor to our church who is a tapir." A tapir is the special forces of our national police. Is this being recorded? Okay. They're bad. They're tough. They're like the Navy SEALs of Nicaragua's national police. He came, he shows up, he's in one of those tight shirts and his body forms the V. He just looks like this guy trains like all the time, right? He's not afraid of anybody. He's trained. He has no reason to fear anybody. I'm preaching, I'm giving the plan of salvation, and I said, "Is there anybody here that would like to be saved?" And of course you do it all nice, you know. "Just as I am." You know, we're trying to be all nice. This dude's just like, boom. I was like, "Okay, if you can raise your hand to be saved, you need to stand up." Boom. "All right, if you're willing to get saved, you need to go talk to Norland right there." Boom. He wasn't worried about being ashamed or embarrassed about accepting Christ. He just did it. Christians should not be embarrassed about talking about Jesus. We should just do it. And if we would invite people to church with no embarrassment, full of character, full of integrity, gaining the respect of the world, this church would be going to 2 and 3 services. You see, our boat is the church, but people see us representing the church everywhere we go. How do they see you? Do they respect you as a Christian? Do they know you're a Christian? Will they want to be like you? Do what you do. Does your character draw them to God, the church? Do you act like a Christian no matter who you're with? It's easy to act like a Christian when you're amongst Christians, but when you're with high-level people, it's embarrassing for you to just say, oh, can I pray for lunch today? Because you know they normally don't. But you know what? If you say, can I pray for lunch today? The mayor of the city will be like, okay. Don't be embarrassed. Gain the respect. You know, even Hollywood gets respect. I think of all those Rocky movies. They're like, we're up to like Rocky 27 probably by now. So now you have the Creeds, right? So Rocky has to gain respect. At the beginning, he's just some Italian fighter from some rough neighborhood. He has to gain respect. He gains his respect. Then you have Tommy Morrison. He comes onto the scene and wants to be trained, and he kind of disrespects Rocky, and then they get in a street fight, and Rocky gains his respect again. All right? And then you're in Rocky IV, and Creed gets disrespected, and he actually dies, and then Rocky has to go to Russia and gains back the respect for America. It's all about respect. It's respect, respect, respect. That's like the central theme of every movie. And then you get Creed and Creed 2, and Drago's son comes back after Rocky 4, and he's going to gain respect back for Russia, but then Creed's son punks him, and it's all about punking who gets the respect in the end. Even Hollywood gets the respect thing, but they confuse it. Hollywood gets, sells, and promotes respect, but Paul gained respect for Christianity through his walk. This is so much bigger. And you do it starting here at the local church. You stay in the boat. You get saved, you get baptized, you become a member, and you stick with that boat till the day you die. You don't walk away from the local church, because the local church is the entity in which we will reach the world with the gospel. That is God's plan. So as Christians, we can be a part of the missionary endeavor and do it successfully. How do we do that? Well, we gain respect in the boat together. But number 2, let's look at verse 20. Now he's already said, don't go. They said, oh, we're going to go. No, it's going to be bad. Well, we're going to go anyway. Okay. So now we're past all that. Now this storm comes along, and it's called Euroclydon in verse 14. I'm sure they're going to eventually come out with a movie called Euroclydon. It's going to be like Meg, right? It's these amazing things, right? These movies that come out with Euroclydon. Okay, then you're down in verse 20. They're flipping out. And when neither sun nor stars in many days appeared, and no small tempest lay on us, all hope that we should be saved was then taken away. How can we successfully complete the mission? Well, you stay in the boat together. Number 2, recognize the storm is surrounding our boat. Christianity, as we know it, is under attack, like it or not. When they're blowing up mosques or blowing up cathedrals, that's just their idea of attacking Christianity. What just happened in California? That's their idea of attacking Christianity, attacking the Jews, attacking our God. Recognize that the storm is around us. Recognize that drugs are growing and people accepting Christ is not. Recognize that divorces are blowing and going, but people joining the church is not. The great baby boomers, you're retiring out. I appreciate the seniors the older people in the church that have been raised up in this church dealing with drums and a red guitar that plugs into the sound system. I appreciate that the last time I was here, you even changed a little bit of the look. You went from pews to chairs. You know what? Let me do something today. I would like to say that I would honor the baby boomers that are here. I would honor the older people that are here and say thank you for being willing to deal with a red guitar and some drums and chairs instead of pews, because you're going to say, let's do whatever we've got to do to continue to grow the church and not let it die. Thank you. I appreciate that. The next generation can have an even bigger impact, but we got to reach them. But we need leaders to step up to the plate. Youth leaders, young adult leaders, young married leaders, family leaders, pastors, people to answer the call to full-time Christian service, and those to support the ministry as well. Because there is a storm surrounding our ship, the church. We need people to use their resources to fund the kingdom builders of this era today. The rapture has not happened yet, so there's still a fist fight going on. And understand this, in a fist fight, there's no set of rules. In the parking lot, there's no rules. It's street fight. We're fighting Satan. We're fighting hell. We're fighting the demons. We're fighting evil. It's a fist fight. This is not a sanctioned boxing event. This is a fist fight. And he's breaking every rule he can to destroy the local church that God established. We need people to use their resources to fund this stuff. How can we successfully complete the mission? Earn respect. Understand that there is a storm and deal with it. Number three, verse 25. Wherefore, sirs, be of good cheer, for I believe God that it shall be even as it was told me. Key phrase there, I believe God. Number three, believe God from inside the boat. Don't jump. Stay in the boat. Stay in the local church. Follow the biblical principles, but believe God. He's not a liar. Satan's the liar. I believe God. Verse 31, don't jump off the boat. Paul said to the centurion and to the soldiers, except these abide in the ship, ye cannot be saved. But people bail on the church all the time. You bail on the church, you're going to lose. It's not a win in the end. People get all, what I say in Spanish, chupale limon. You know, it looks like they've been sucking on a lemon. They get all mad at the pastor or somebody else in the church, and they're all sucking on the lemon. They get this all sucking on the lemon face. They leave the church. You don't stay in the ship. You aren't a part of God's plan. When you're not a part of God's plan, the death of your future significance for the kingdom dies with your bad attitude. You don't bail on the local church. You build up the local church. You invite people to the local church. You see people saved in the local church. You don't bail on the church or God's perfect plan. Look at verse 23 and 24. For there stood by me this night the angel of God, whose I am and whom I serve, saying, fear not, Paul, thou must be brought before Caesar. And lo, God hath given thee all them that sail with thee. In other words, you stick with Paul, you stay in the boat, and you survive. You stay in the boat. This boat's getting tossed to and fro. Satan, whoop, got things flying off here. Satan is tossing this thing to and fro. Look at it. He's tossing it. You got parts flying everywhere. I'm nervous now. I got boats falling apart. Kind of funny, though, but that's kind of what the church looks like. You know, when I started in this world, and church, Christianity. Church was falling apart in the 80s. But I believe there is a generation that can rise up and change all that. People like to make fun of the millennials. I've met millennials. I think some of them are pretty smart. iGen is the new generation. I think there's some pretty sharp people coming up in iGen. But if the church does not reach Gen X and Gen Y and iGen, it all just dies off. You see, I speak in churches all over in America when I come back on furlough. And I see these pastors, and I will never forget. I spoke at a church in Kansas, and this pastor looked at me and he said, "Well, I guess I'm just killing off the church." You can tell there's sadness in his humor. There he was, 80 years old, Sunday morning, and you're speaking to 12 people. It's like, man, what a shame he didn't sit to the side, give it to another generation, and then you get behind that pastor and help him. Because that next pastor may have had that church run at 300. And folks, I'll tell you this, numbers do matter. They do matter. Because numbers mean souls. And I'm here to tell you this morning, there is a heaven. There is a hell. People are going to spend eternity in one of those two places, and it's our job to do something about it. Somebody's drowning in the ocean because of a riptide. Somebody's got to be the one that grabs the flotation device and jumps in the same current and gets carried out to sea to save that person. Somebody's got to be the one. While everybody else is on the beach going, "Oh, well, what do we do?" Somebody's got to dive in. Somebody's got to go get that person. Amen. Same thing with the local church, folks. Somebody's got to go out and do it. Somebody's got to be the one that goes out and reaches them. Somebody's got to be the one that actually gives the money to make it happen. Don't jump off the boat. Don't bail on the church. Stay in God's plan. You know, this believe God from inside the boat. I'm a believer. I believe it. I bought into it. I started studying about something that happened in the 90s. Met a guy who was born and raised in South Africa, first generation, but also met a seventh generation Afrikaans, that's your white South African. I just talked to him. I said, "Well, you know, explain to me this whole deal. What happened?" When Mandela was elected, explain this to me. And in all honesty, they explained, "Well, we thought this was the end of South Africa." But it turned out that Mandela did turn the country around and did what he said he was going to do. That's from a seventh generation Afrikaans. You know, you're like, okay, that's all this guy knew. Same thing with the guy who had been born in South Africa. It was interesting because I was looking at different things that sports had done to impact nations or people groups. When we were launching Avance Sport, I wanted to see, hey, what's some history here with sport? And Nelson Mandela actually used rugby to get people's mind off of their bitterness, anger, hatred, and fears. You see, South Africa's Springboks versus the New Zealand All Blacks in 1995 in the World Cup was against all odds that they would even make it that far, let alone win. South Africa actually won the Rugby World Cup a year after Mandela became the country's first democratically elected president. Mandela championed and promoted the Springboks, seeing it was a unifying moment in history. And he had a chance to change people's hearts. It was a success. Francois Pienaar, the captain that became very close to Mandela that year. To this day, when he does interviews, he will tear up when he talks about his relationship with Mandela and his legacy in South Africa. Pienaar's words in the last few minutes of this champion game actually came out in a movie. Actually, I made a movie about this. It was such a big deal. And I'd like to just show you just a clip, just a portion, small portion of what was said, something of great significance that was said in those last few moments of the 1995 World Cup. Listen to the words that he says to his team, because it could go either way at this moment. Africa, a country that was partially changed by sport. But it really wasn't about the sport. It was about unification. It was about forgiveness. It was about getting beyond things in the heart. And as I was reading the story in this, and then it came out in this movie, and I was listening to those words and reading those words, researching this, Pienaar's words in the last few minutes of this championship game, as he heard a unified nation singing together for the first time, and he huddles his guys up, and he says, "Heads up! Look in my eyes! Do you hear? Listen to your country. 7 minutes. 7 minutes. Defense. 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 This is it. This is our destiny." Man, I don't know about you, but like when I come across moments in history, I should have been a history major, and I read stories or I hear these stories in history, it's just like the hair rises on my arms and I'm just pumped to go do something. I don't even play rugby, but I just want to go play rugby. I just get pumped about these stories in history and moments, pivotal moments in history. But you know, we have the largest sports ministry in the entire country, in Nicaragua, and I don't even like soccer. And that's our sport. I mean, it's not I dislike soccer. I just don't really understand soccer that much. I even joke with our guys. I say, you know, we should really change up our sport here. And I give them the memes, you know, and I'll print them out and show them to them. Soccer, the sport where 90 minutes you act like you're hurt. And then I say rugby, the sport where 80 minutes you act like you're not hurt. The sport of men, right? You know, sport for me, that's whatever. Avance Sport for me is not about sports at all. It's about the young people we reach through sport. And instead of holding up the rugby ball, we should be holding up the Bible. And our preachers should be saying, "Heads up, look in my eyes, do you hear? Listen to your God. Time is so near. Time is so near for the return of Christ. Defense, defense, defense. Get in the game, church. And then the final words would be the same. Because once you accepted Christ, you became a son of God. So the words would not change. The words would simply be, this is it. This is our destiny. What's the purpose in life outside of Christ? There isn't one. Once you accept Christ, once you became a soldier of the cross, that should have really been everything you lived for to the day you die. Yeah, we got to go to work, we got to pay all the bills, et cetera, et cetera. I get that, but there's heaven, there's hell, and people are going to spend eternity in one of those two places. That's why it's so important. Because in all of the distance of eternity, which has no beginning and has no end, if we were to try to mark the air just with a little slash, just pull our pen out and just mark it, that little mark would represent our entire life compared to all of eternity. Once you accepted Christ, understand this is it. This is our destiny. This is all we have to live for. In Nicaragua, we are planting churches with messed up people who are lost, lonely, and left out. We are planting churches, doing Avance Sports youth outreach, getting at-risk kids and teens off the streets and into a relationship with God Himself through the blood of Jesus Christ. I should not have to ever call you and say, hey, we got this need. You should be calling me and saying, man, we got all this money. Can we build a church? We got all kinds. I got projects coming out of my ears. We lack $10,000 right now to finish off another. Church. What are you going to invest in? A portfolio plan? Or something that matters to the kingdom of God for all eternity? If you'd stand with your heads bowed and your eyes closed, please. How many of y'all are saved? Raise your hand. Here's a challenge for you. Go find people who can't raise their hand when that question's asked and invite them to church. With heads bowed and eyes closed, I'd like to ask a question. Is anybody here that's not saved? Raise your hand. Don't be embarrassed. You're not saved. You've never accepted Jesus as Savior. You need to deal with that. You need to accept Christ. You need to change that immediately. How many young people do we have? Let's say you're 25 or under. Raise your hand. 25 or under. Okay. I turned 49 this year. I feel like a lean, mean machine, but time tells me that's a big fat lie. And so does 6 o'clock in the morning when I get up. We need military personnel on the front lines of the ministry to replace those who are getting worn out and will be dying off. Young people, stop what you're doing. Go to Bible college. Go into ministry. We have 7 billion people on planet Earth. Quit thinking about it. Quit talking about it. Quit praying about it. Quit wrestling about it in your mind, in your heart, and just do it. And if you're here this morning and you say, yeah, maybe God is calling me into full-time Christian service. Maybe He is. Maybe I'm 40 years old and God is calling me into full-time Christian service. God is wanting me to do more for the kingdom than I ever imagined. And He may be calling me to do something different. At least be willing to say, God, here's my hand. I'll do it. Raise your hand if God may be calling you into doing something different and bigger. Raise your hand without embarrassment whatsoever. I had a pastor of 18 years in one church resign his church to go be a missionary in Nicaragua. Raise your hand if you think God may be calling you to do something greater and bigger in your life. Amen. Then ask yourselves and confront yourself with this question without raising any hands. When is the last time somebody got saved because of something you did? I'm talking inviting them to church, talking to them about Jesus, whipping out this tract that I have here in my pocket called The Romans Road to Salvation. I remember when these were yellow and printed in black ink and they looked tacky. And when they were yellow and printed in black ink and looked tacky, you could still take one because they had the right verses and you could lead somebody to Christ. You know, you can lead people to Christ. And you don't have to be embarrassed about it. When is the last time you invited somebody to church? Go find somebody. You, I don't have any unsaved friends. Go have coffee at McDonald's. A bunch of unsaved people there for sure. I promise you. But I'm asking you to confront yourself and what God may be asking you to do. Would he ask you to do more for missions? Would he ask you to give more for missions? You see, I'm here to tell you it works. Churches have been planted, land has been purchased, buildings have been built, seminary has been started, classes are in session, whether I'm here or not. Avance Sport is reaching kids this weekend, whether I'm there or not. It's already in motion, it's moving, it's smalling, it's getting bigger, but the need is getting greater. And that is happening around the world. Church, wake up and get in the game with us. Get in the fight with us. Don't be afraid of a little fist fight. Because you got God in your corner, you got God watching your back. Pastor?